This being the first Sunday of Lent, I'd like to start with a confession, which is that for many years, in fact, probably most of my life, I have just not liked the Great Litany. For those of you who might not know what the Great Litany is, we just experienced it at the start of our liturgy. It was when we sang back and forth, and the choir and clergy processed around the space, and we prayed. We prayed about envy and malice and hatred and pride and what used to be vainglory and hypocrisy. Truth be told, I think that for most of my years, I endured it, kind of like dental visits or like long lines at the DMV or like the ubiquity of kale. Just line by line. It's like, well, wait, there's another section. Hold on. And I honestly don't know when it changed. When one year I kind of got it. And that's not to say that I like the Great Litany. I really don't think you're supposed to. But I got it. And I've come to understand it more and its purpose, especially right now, at this time of the year, as we are trying to come close in a particular way. This sense of embodied prayer and confession together. It's like an ethical alarm clock or a moral scrubbing, abrasive enough to get through our layers of indifference, a way for us to pay attention, to wake up and look around and see what is happening in a world where we are surrounded by half-truths and by false promises. And so it is this first Sunday of Lent, and we find ourselves where we find ourselves every first Sunday of Lent, which is in the wilderness. And we're there with Jesus, and he has been there for a long time. How long? Well, our text tells us for 40 days. Now, when you hear the word 40, whenever you're hearing a biblical story, just know that it is a meme, right? 40 days, 40 years. What the storyteller is trying to tell you is it is a long time, right? It is longer than you planned for. It is probably longer than you are ready for. It is certainly longer than you are comfortable with. Right, it is the kind of length of duration that it goes past what you had set aside, what your experience or what your boundary was. You are going to wait longer still. And so Jesus has been in this wilderness, and he is fasting, he is waiting. And how did he get there? Right? This gospel is different from the other three. In this gospel, for some reason, Jesus is led into the wilderness by the Spirit. I've been wondering all week, why would God do this? Why would God intentionally lead Jesus into the wilderness to face what he faces? And I've come to wonder about the role of testing in our lives. Not testing like the kind of testing where you're to be found wrong, but the kind of testing like you test a metal to see what it is made of. Or the kind of testing like you test a student to see what they may not yet know. This is the kind of testing that Jesus faced in the wilderness. So he's been there for a long time. Days, weeks, fasting. And as the text tells us, he is famished. Right? The kind of hungry where you get just a little bit desperate. He's probably tired, worn. I don't know about you, but that's not often when I make my best decisions. And then, what enters the picture but this character, this entity, this void of the good? What's really interesting to me in this passage is that it's not very long, right? It's 11 verses. And in these 11 verses, this character is named three different ways, right? And this is not an English translation of the same Greek word. There are three different words in the Greek for us to get devil, tempter, Satan. Three understandings of the one who slanders, the one who tests or tempts, the one who is the adversary. It's almost as if there's different ways to describe it because there are infinite guises, infinite ways in that the tempter uses. And you'll notice in both stories, both in this second creation account in Genesis and in the story of Jesus in the desert, that the way that the tempter works is not to refute openly Eve or Jesus. It doesn't show them an entirely different road to go down that they may not know about. No, the tempter takes what you know and starts to shade it, starts to question the meaning, shift it over here. And before you know it, subtly the ground, the firmament at your feet starts to erode and you are no longer on solid ground. For half-truths are much more dangerous than outright lies. And the root of temptation is a false promise. So let's look at these three tests, because I think that they are tests for Jesus, because they are tests for us. The first test, stones into bread. The tempter says to Jesus, if you really are the Son of God, you could take these stones and turn them into bread and you could eat. Jesus is starving. But he sees in this a false promise, right? The tempter is pointing to this bread that will serve Jesus' end, and Jesus is pointing to God. And he says, no, the false promise is that we can protect ourselves from need or want, the hardships of this world. In fact, our sustenance is found in God. And so in a moment, Jesus finds himself on top of the pinnacle of the temple. I want you to imagine yourself on a dizzying height. The slope just falls away because we're on top of the tower in the temple and it just falls away into the Kidron Valley. And there's a whisper in Jesus' ear. Leap. God will protect you. God has promised that no harm will ever come to you. Just jump. Jesus sees the false promise here as well. The false promise that we can protect ourselves, protect those whom we love, keep them safe and sound and secure forever. Again, our own needs secured no need for relationship with God. The third test, the third and final test, the apex of the test, where would this be in Matthew's gospel? On top of a mountain. This is our third mountain in the last month, for those of you who are counting. In Matthew's gospel, right, he wants to make sure we pay attention. So we spent a month with the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus was talking about the realm of God, the realm of heaven, and how you live. And then last week, we were on the mountain with Jesus and the disciples, and he was transfigured. And today, we are on a very high mountain. And again, if you really are, the devil shows all of the power of humankind. It's really simple. If you want this, all you have to do is serve me. Jesus exposes the false promise once more, that we can protect ourselves by claiming power over and against other people. Right? Because once we reach for this control, we feel like we have protection. We have control over this. But in fact, what is happening is we are being controlled by our needs, by our insecurities, by our fears. And the test is over. The reason why we tell these stories right now, at this time of the year, is that these stories are basic to human existence. They are who we are. We struggle with them. We fail at them. And the reason why we have so much trouble is because we forget. We forget who we are, and these half-truths and these false promises, they slowly lead us into these ways, and pretty soon, before we realize it, we are in over our head. Because these stories are about power and presumption. Right? You have this half-truth, this false promise that we can be free from any need or want, that we can have complete safety within our reach, and that our power over other people will protect us. The challenge here, the reason why it's so hard, is because there are truths in here. We need sustenance to be safe, to have authority. But it's when we find our identity, who we are, in these earthly means, and we serve them to our own ends, that we forget who we truly are. Which is why we tell this story. And I think for me, a part of the story that I find to be of the essence happens both in our text with Jesus in the desert and in a way with Eve and Adam in the garden. Because in both texts, the tempter says these words: if you really are a child of God, if you really are the Son of God. The tempter doesn't argue about whether Jesus is the Son of God and was declared just a few verses earlier at the River Jordan. But if you are, why don't you do this? We've just begun this journey in Lent. And those words are going to come back to us all the way near the end. Because the next time in Matthew's gospel that Jesus hears these words, if you are the Son of God, he will be upon the cross. And it is the passers-by who deride him, who taunt him, who mock him. If you really are the Son of God, save yourself. You saved others. Just save yourself. Jesus will hunger. Jesus will suffer. Jesus will lose power. But he never forgets who and whose he is. It's why we sing this litany at this time of the year. It's why we have these clay crosses. It's why we take on these practices. We do this at this time of year because it is so easy when we come into these times of temptation, and it is when, not if, when we come into these times of testing and the world around us is pointing us to bread and to safety and to power, we sing these prayers, we hold these crosses so that we can remember just who and whose we really are.